Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. And today we're talking to Lerner from the Orcas Food Co-op. Lerner Limbach is not only an incredible cooperator and instigator, he's also lately been informing himself very much about agricultural policy in our various Democratic candidates for president. So today we're going to begin with the roundup of which president we might be interested to have. Welcome to the show, Lerner.
Thanks, Severin, and I just wanted to say thank you for bringing me onto the show, and the timing was very serendipitous. And also thanks for joining us at our Agricultural Summit last February. We had Severin out to San Juan County, and she was our keynote speaker at our Agricultural Summit. So it's nice to talk to you again. And so the reason the timing for this is really amazing is we had our county convention this past Sunday for the Democratic Party, and that's where all the delegates, the individuals who were elected to represent our county for our candidates, got together in a room and had another convention to talk about issues and to elect to reduce the number down and send a smaller number of people on to the state convention. So I was elected by our community as one of the four delegates to go on to the congressional district and the state convention. And I am representing Bernie Sanders. And so I wanted to let all of the agricultural community know, which I understand there are some 6,000 listeners to this radio show, most of which are going to be farmers, agriculturally minded people. The reason that you should care about this campaign is that there is a huge difference between the two candidates that are running for the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders has a platform on his website, which I'm sure Severin will link to. I'm going to go ahead and just read the summary of the agricultural issues. It takes a few minutes, and I think that it's very important, and I want to broadcast this out there, if that's all right. Can I start that now, Severin?
And I would just take this moment to mention that Greenhorns is a nonpartisan 501c3 organization. However, many of the farmers in our networks are interested in the Bernie campaign, and we as Greenhorns have been Bernie heavy in our thinking, and I personally am going to vote for Bernie if I can.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Back to you, Lerner. Tell us about the policy.
And this is definitely, I have a lot of friends that are Hillary supporters. They're entitled to their opinion, but this is, this is about agricultural issues, and I think it's really important for people to understand the difference between the candidates and understand what it is that each one is bringing forward. And it happens to be one of the big reasons why I am campaigning, not only voting, but campaigning. So here it is, the section on improving the rural economy.
Okay, give us the platform, Lerner.
As someone who has represented a rural state for more than 24 years, improving the lives of rural Americans is a top priority for Senator Sanders. Family farms and ranches are the backbone of rural America and the U.S. economy. Farmers are also among our nation's foremost stewards of our lands and water. Throughout his career, Senator Sanders has successfully fought for innovative rural economic development initiatives, including investments in farm-to-school, in farm-to-table initiatives, agritourism programs, school gardens, large-scale biomass-fired electric plants, shared agricultural processing and storage facilities, and anaerobic digesters to process cow manure into methane gas. Senator Sanders will fight for farm policies that will foster the entry of a new generation of owner-operators. He will not back away from land stewardship standards that include the Commonwealth of Clean Water for All. As President, Senator Sanders will adopt policies that will make sure that family farmers and rural economies thrive, expand support for young and beginning farmers, produce an abundant and nutritious food supply, establish an ongoing regeneration of our soils, and enlist farmers and partners as partners in promoting conservation and stewardship to keep an air and water clean, to keep our air and water clean, and to combat climate change. In his section on family farms instead of factory farms, Senator Sanders believes that we need more family farms, not more factory farms. It is unacceptable that just four corporations control 82% of the nation's beef cattle market, 85% of soybean processing, and 63% of pork processing. It is unacceptable that there are over 300,000 fewer farmers than there were 20 years ago. It is unacceptable that the top 10% of farms collect 75% of farm subsidies, while the bottom 62% do not receive any subsidies. We have to adopt policies that will turn this around. In his section on supporting agriculture, in 1966, farmers received 40 cents for every dollar Americans spent on food. Today, they only receive 16 cents on the dollar. As President, Senator Sanders will reverse this trend by, one, fighting for America's small and mid-sized farms. Abraham Lincoln called the United States Department of Agriculture the People's Department, and Senator Sanders will ensure that the agency lives up to its name by expanding its services for new and underserved farmers. Two, encouraging the growth of regional food systems. Farmers throughout the country are boosting their bottom line and reinvigorating their communities by selling directly to local consumers, institutions, and restaurants. Senator Sanders will invest in this movement, helping Americans support local farms. Three, reversing trade policies like NAFTA that have flooded the American market with agricultural products produced in countries with less stringent environmental, labor, and safety regulations. And four, enforcing our country's antitrust laws against large agribusiness and food corporations. A few large companies dominate many agricultural industries, allowing them to force unfair prices on farmers. Senator Sanders will stand up to these corporations and fight to ensure that farmers receive fair prices. Thank you for letting me read that whole thing.
So I like how he keeps talking about the movement. That's pretty awesome. What else are you responding to in that policy?
Well,
maybe you can put it in the context of your own work supporting infrastructure for local food consumption,
totally,
distribution, and production in the San Juan Islands.
Yes, all over that. So what really stood out to me as I read this months ago, last year really, was how much the language that he's using in his platform resembles the language that I have used and that my collaborators have used to write up our plans for our own projects in our community. We received a grant for $25,000 last fall to develop a food hub in the San Juan Islands, and we've been writing a business plan for that and doing our feasibility study. That that money was funded through the Farm Bill, through the USDA, as part of a local food producer promotion program. And so we need to fight to expand that funding so that more communities have that opportunity. We're applying for another grant this year, and we're hoping to take our business plan and now implement it. And what that, what the Food Hub does is exactly what Bernie Sanders is saying he wants to do, which is to expand the markets for the small and mid-sized farms and to increase the amount of revenue from the final sold product that's going to the farmer. Because right now, the farmers, they can sell direct, but the vast majority of food is consumed in commercial outlets. In the United States, 99% of the food consumed is purchased from non-direct avenues. So, for instance, I started and I run the Orcas Food Co-op, which is a small co-op. We do last year we did $2.3 million in sales. We have 25 employees. We are the number one purchaser of local products in our county, and we try really hard to prioritize local products. But we're an anomaly because, and a lot of food co-ops around the country do have the same values, and they're kind of the exception. And so the issue is that larger stores and restaurants that don't necessarily have the same, you know, philosophical values that that we do, that some you know, co-ops and some other businesses have, is that it's a lot of work to coordinate with every single individual producer, and especially if you're just getting one box of lettuce from them, or you know, one product, or you're getting a product from one farmer 1 week and another farmer another week. So they're simply not willing to do all of that legwork. And so what we found in, we've confirmed in our feasibility study, is that the main challenge to connecting the local products to the markets is the coordination and the distribution. And so that's what the Food Hub does. And basically what this campaign is about is saying, you know, why is it that we have this food crisis, we have this agricultural crisis going on in our country? We have the average age of farmer is 60 or 58 and getting older. New farmers are struggling to get into farming and stay in farming. A lot of the farmers that have started have, the statistics, you know, show that a lot of them 5 years later are no longer farming, so it's hard to get into farming and succeed. And so why is it that we are, and we're facing climate change, so why is it that we're still using $20 billion a year to subsidize large-scale agribusiness, conventional agriculture practices that are not sustainable, and not investing in, or not investing very much, a very small sliver of the pie into these local and regional food systems and small to mid-sized family farms. And he reiterates it over and over again in this in his platform. And so what this is about is doing a complete reversal of what's currently happening. And that's, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, but the beauty of this campaign is that it's really not just about getting out and voting. It's about getting out and getting involved in campaigning. And so that's what's happening right now, and, you know, got me involved. And I know a lot of people that have been motivated by this campaign. And it's really not about Bernie Sanders. It's about the issues that are part of the platform, and the way that it's gotten so many people involved and so many people to go out and take action is very powerful, and that's really what's going to make this stuff actually a reality.
So I feel like there's a theory of change thing happening here, and there's an alignment with a lot of us who are interested in building a new food economy or building a regional food economy inside the old economy, which is much of it is to do with producerist attitudes of efficiency and scale and global trade and commodity export. And those have been the kind of key drivers and the theory of change for the USDA and the Farm Bill program and from a foreign policy perspective. And so that trickles down into all of our communities in a certain way. I'm standing around here looking out on irrigated alfalfa fields and pecan orchards, deep wells of producers who are coming from out of state and installing those high-input, high-water-use crops for export. And in every region, you can look around and you can easily see what are the groups of crops that are going out into the world and what are the groups of crops that are being consumed more within the locality and within the region. And you were talking a little bit about the complexities that are part of coordinating that more regional trade and some of the programs that you've been talking about, the value-added producer grant and these cooperative development grants that do exist, that are the little part of the pie that we operate from. So here you are being political and getting campaigning, and I wonder how you are approaching the campaign and maybe a little bit about how you think others of us who are selling our products to local markets and who are having a high level of touch with potential voters could express our solidarity other than a bumper sticker. Could we, let's think about it. I have some ideas.
Yeah. What are your ideas?
Well, my idea is that farmers markets are a very good place, and CSA letters that go home every week with the vegetables are a very good place for getting this conversation going. You know, if we look around at the cultural influencers in this country, you know, from Hollywood to Wall Street, a lot of them are buying food from friends of ours in the Young Farmers Movement and believe in the Young Farmers Movement. And to the extent that we're able to be self-aware about our political influence or to gain some coordinated political influence, that seems pretty strategic.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think should happen?
Definitely. I mean, I think, you know, one of my biggest priorities is, you know, going forward is to make sure that as many people are informed as possible. And I think, so step one is, you know, get informed, you know, read this information, go on to Bernie's website, you know, do the research. And there's also a lot of coordinated information sharing within the campaign. We can, if people want to contact me or just go to the Bernie site and go to, there's some volunteer links, and there's a lot of ways to get to a contact, even contact in your area.
So one of the things about this election and the timing of it is that it's also happening at a critical inflection point in the history of the U.S. agriculture. And, you know, we know that in the last 10 years, about $60 billion have been paid out to the top 10% of agricultural producers in terms of crop insurance payments. And
yeah.
So those crop insurance payments are often being made to people who are suffering from climate problems such as drought or flood. And drought and flood is really most of the reason that people are claiming crop insurance. And drought and flood are both related to changing climate. And so we have a changing climate. We have a change in the demographics of ownership. Since 70% of farmland is owned by people over the age of 65,
the decisions about stewardship and the kind of farming that is happening on our farmland is changing rapidly, and it has to respond to a changing climate. And I wonder if you could make an argument for why the theory of change that Bernie holds and the theory of change that many of us in the Young Farmers Movement hold makes sense from a food security, from a national, from a food sovereignty perspective. Like, what are your arguments for why we should reorient our food system to be more sustainable?
Well, there's a lot. So, I mean, just, you know, soil erosion, carbon sequestration is known to be more effective on smaller sustainable farms, not on mass tracts of tilled land with chemicals and, you know, conventional agriculture. So we know that. The other thing is that when it comes to seeds, you know, what they're doing in conventional agriculture, they're using, you know, often one variety on a huge amount of land. A lot of it is genetically modified in the commodity crops or highly bred. Those varieties are less resilient to climatic change because they're developed for these specific conditions that we have now, and the climate changes. And really, what you need is resiliency, and that happens on a regional level much easier than it happens, you know, on a national level when you're making this genetically modified variety of a crop and then selling the seed, you know, nationally on a huge scale. If there's a problem with that, it's not going to be able to adapt to all the conditions, you know, drought 1 year, wet 1 year. So what local and regional seed companies are doing and plant breeders are doing is they're trying to build, they're trying to breed resiliency into the genetics of the seeds. And so that's one component of it. You cannot do that on a large scale system. It's inherently flawed in that way. So that's one way. The other thing is the resiliency in communities that happens when you build the local and regional food system. Monsanto is the exact opposite of a sustainable and resilient food system. What Monsanto wants to do is to expand the reach of the large-scale agribusiness and large-scale conventional farms, and they want to control the food supply. And it's, you know, Roundup and other chemicals and the tilling and everything about it is basically literally eroding the soil, and it's eroding our agricultural potential. And this is where the Clinton campaign and the Sanders campaign are on complete opposite sides of the spectrum. And so it's important to I don't like to get into a lot of negative, you know, campaigning or anything, but there's a couple of facts that it's important to realize in that the Clinton campaign is has gotten a lot of funding from Monsanto. They're closely tied together. In 2014, she spoke at the International Biotech Conference, and she was paid several hundred thousand dollars. And at that conference, she promoted the use of GMOs. And you can find that online. If you just Google search, it's quite easy. And so there she is, you know, saying, you know, we need to be using these technologies. We need to not have GMOs be labeled. And she's going and just taking contributions from Monsanto, and she's going and making speeches at the biotech conferences. Bernie Sanders is the complete opposite. You know, right now in his campaign, because it's moving to California, he's talking about, he's come out and said, you know, why is it that you know, 67 or so countries around the world require, they have mandatory GMO labeling, and the United States doesn't. And it's a shame right now that that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is being negotiated in secret, and you know they're trying to move that forward when it's potentially going to enable corporations like Monsanto to sue governments, foreign governments, or our own states, such as Vermont, if they try to require labeling of GMO foods. Bernie's been opposed to that the whole time. Hillary has been promoting the TPP the whole time. Now she says it needs a little work, but that's not, it's basically disingenuous. So anyway, kind of went on a tangent there. Sorry, go ahead and ask another question.
Well, I think the point is that there is a really different theory of change as far as the future of land management in this country. You know, we haven't even gotten into our public lands, which is another little bit more than 400 million acres of land, which is being mined for various minerals and also for oil and our state land, which are being logged. And the management of all of these lands not only contributes to the way that our whole society is able to cope with climate change. It is also our land, and our land has really not been a major consideration largely in the political debate. And I wonder if even if the convention goes in the Clinton direction, if it's time to make land an issue for Hillary, and as it has been for Bernie, and obviously that will happen when the time comes, but it seems like letting candidates get away with a policy that's anti-life, that is anti the life of the soil, anti the agricultural life of small communities, and anti the life of our large public lands through these, you know, highly subsidized mining permits, is eroding our ecological infrastructure and exacerbating the negative impacts of climate change and flooding and drought events, et cetera. So
yeah.
I feel like even no matter what happens between the Democrats, we have got to do a better job as a food and local farm economy and local economy and social justice, all the movements in getting land policy and land use policy, federal lands policy, higher up on the political scale.
Exactly, and I mean, so, I totally agree with what you're saying, and just want to thank you and the Greenhorns for fighting for that for so long, because really, I mean, that you guys already are, you know, this grassroots force, and I've already seen a lot of positive changes coming out of that, so. It's really just
so. So one of the conversations we haven't yet had, and we don't have very much more time, is what's happening in the San Juan Islands, and your roles are, you have quite a number of roles there, and they're interrelated. How about tell us kind of where you come, just in your short little career there, and you know, showing up in San Juan, what you saw, you know, was needed, and what you were able to accomplish.
Yeah, so I have lived in the San Juan Islands since 2001, and did a little traveling early on, but really been settled there for the last 10 years, pretty solid. And I just decided that, you know, if I can just put down my roots and have an impact here, then that's probably the most useful thing I can do with myself. So that was kind of how I started operating 10 years ago. Initially, I was farming, and you know, I raised goats, and I had I did a lot of various farmy, kind of homesteady permaculture all kinds of activities. Gradually, though, over the years, I started getting more community involved, and at one point ran a program called Farm Education and Sustainability for Teens, which I didn't start, but I just was able to adopt for a year or two, and working with high school students. And so I just started getting more integrated in the community and less, you know, on the ground actually growing food. And one of the reasons for that, is that I just know that we're in such a critical time, and we can't just go farm and, you know, I couldn't just go and hide out on my farm and feel like I was doing enough. And so,
although I would make a point, because often I'm getting this thing like, oh, Severin, it's so good you don't just go and farm and you're going out and coordinating and speaking. Yeah. And I'm like, damn it, I wish I could go and farm.
I know. Well,
and it's equally important work, and we have to be very careful in our framing, because there's so much hierarchical down nose looking about agriculture, and it's got to stop with us. And I know you're not doing it, but I just am sensitive to the topic. Continue with your story. I'm sorry for the interruption.
I agree with you once again, and thanks for bringing that up. I mean, it's a void in my life right now, which is I'm eventually going to fill. I mean, I'm still trying to farm. I'm not farming right now because just can't. But definitely the desire's there, and I am so grateful for everybody who is farming. And this is more about, you know, finding my not that other people should stop farming, but that my gift to the world. I guess I've just been realizing.
Well, let's just face it, Lerner. You're really good at spreadsheets.
I'm good at
spreadsheets. I mean, your little tiny co-op on a little tiny island is doing more than $2 million in sales after such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, a baller at the business side. So I don't, sorry that it made you feel like you had to say an excuse, because shit, if everybody could do spreadsheets like you could, we'd have a hell of a lot more co-ops.
Well, it's partly about spreadsheets, and I had some great spreadsheet, tutors and stuff like that, but I think that, you know, it's partly about, people skills and getting out there and, you know, really just being able to bring people together around an issue. And for me, you know, the issue is food. And I just found that, you know, with my determination and my just desire to change the food system, that people would rally behind me. And that's, originally I started organizing the Orcas Food Co-op project, and was not expecting to be managing the co-op after it opened. I just thought, you know, I'll help get it going. And, you know, it's just been a learning process for me, and just realizing, like, okay, I just need to be willing to take on this leadership role. And so I've grown from this very reluctant leader to still definitely having some reluctance, but being a lot more accepting of that's just what I'm doing. It doesn't mean that, you know, that it's, important or anything than anybody else, or somebody just farming. It just is what I'm doing. I'm sorry that I'm not farming. You know, it's like I want to farm also, but I think this is, you know, the way that I can be helpful. And so, the reason that I'm on the boards and the committees, and, you know, more boards and subcommittees and working groups, and is just using those same skills, and basically I'm just kind of doing the same thing on every committee that I'm on. It's not like, incredibly complicated or anything. It's just that, basically I want to help increase the effectiveness of these different groups, and so, you know, if I get an opportunity to be helpful, then I take it. I'm trying to keep everything, because there's a lot to do. I'm trying to stay oriented towards agricultural issues. In my community in San Juan County, there happens to be a lot of momentum right now, and a lot taking place. And so, I mean, that's kind of, you know, why I'm really busy. But we've got the Food Hub project that I'm just one of five people on the project development team there. Really amazing collaboration between our food co-op, the Agricultural Resources Committee, the San Juan County Agricultural Guild, the Northwest Agriculture Business Center, and the WSU Agricultural Extension. And so we have basically we've built these broad collaborations. I'm the chair currently of the Agricultural Resources Committee, and that gives me a avenue to kind of learn about policy that affects agriculture in San Juan County, and that's been a great learning opportunity. And we also help organize the Agricultural Summit and things like that. Work with farmers to help them through issues that they're facing. You know, if they're just having challenges with the tax assessor, or you know, wanting to build farmer grounding, or you know, they have questions about that stuff. We try to direct them the right way. I recently joined the Northwest Agriculture Business Center because they serve five counties, and it was a way for me to kind of serve this great organization that provides technical assistance for agricultural businesses, and also a way for me to learn more and just grow in my abilities. So that I can be, a better service. The Northwest Agriculture Business Center is also the Rural Cooperative Development Center for the Northwest, and so money flows through the USDA to the Northwest Agriculture Business Center, and they're the designated Rural Cooperative Development Center. So that's also really exciting, and I believe that we're entering into an age of a new cooperative economy, and I think that agriculture is a huge part of that. And so, having those two together is really great. You know, for me, I feel like I'm working.
I agree with your analysis, and I have to wrap us up because we just went a little over time.
Cool. I'm glad I got that in.
Did I just interrupt you?
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm agreeing with your analysis that this has begun in agriculture, but it's not only happening in agriculture, even though that's where we are. And it's happening in software world, and it's happening in local economic platforms. It's even happening within spiritual communities that are facilitating new economy initiatives of young people. And we have to conclude. During the talk I gave in San Juan, I spontaneously said something that I really agree with and have continued to spontaneously say, which is that we are sitting here inside the architecture, inside an economy that was built through extraction, and extraction of lumber in your case of your region, extraction of gold in California, extraction of various commodities over the years through agriculture. And so we're all kind of the daughters of extraction, and we're all complicit in that economic history. And in many places, the natural wealth of those ecosystems and of those regions has become depleted. And it feels like a lot of the work of coordinating and organizing and recalibrating and reconstituting a new economy is a management job, management-intensive job. And so we can consider ourselves as managers of contraction. And actually, in the spirit of the managers of contraction hat, the manager's contractor hat, I ordered a URL, and it's for sale. It's called www.makeamericasmallagain.com, and I'm willing to take bids. All money will benefit the Greenhorns, but I figured that it's time to speculate on contraction since peak everything seems to be happening pretty shortly. Thank you for dealing with my diversion, and Lerner, it's such a great pleasure to see you and know of your work, and anyway, it's very impressive, and if you're ever in the San Juan Islands, I'm sure that you can go over there because it's open to the public and drop some cash.
Yes, it's still open to the public. Seated.
Okay. Thank you, Lerner.
Thanks, Severin.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.